Yellow.
Hey.
Yeah, see, I wasn't even going to try. I've given up on trying to actually welcome
people to enjoy the show. When you say you've given up.
Yeah. Welcome to Thinking Like a Lawyer. I'm Joe Patrice from Above the Law. I'm joined by Catherine Rubino and Chris Williams. We're here to give a quick rundown on some of the big legal stories of last week. But first, we should talk about other things.
If you want to, we start
in our small talk segment. Sorry, you jumped the gun there. I was trying to.
Did I jump the gun, or was it the gun only going to go off if once I started?
I bristle at the accusation.
Bristle. Interesting. Mm. Is that mean admitted true? Does it have a new?
It does not. That is not what
now?
That word means.
I think it might in this instance. Context clues
shocked,
give me a lot of information.
Shocked at this. So we are having our little small talk segment. I will kick off quite literally and say that I managed to win all of my fantasy games this weekend. So that's
well, la-dee-da to you.
So you didn't.
I lost them all.
Aw, that's a shame.
Including to you, by the way.
That is true. We do have a fantasy league. Maybe I can teach you some pointers sometime.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Stop it. Just stop. But on the upside is the New York Giants actually managed to win a game.
That was the opposite of an upside for those of us who had money on the opposite result.
So not everything is coming up, Joe Patrice.
Yeah, that was bad. I did think that the number one seed from last year's playoffs would manage to beat one of the worst teams in football, but it turns out that didn't work.
I am a Giants fan. I did not even watch the end of the game because I was like, oh, it's not gonna end well. I'm just gonna peace out.
Are we just not gonna acknowledge the queen died?
Who?
I mean, it's a real shock that a 96-year-old woman in poor health died. That somebody should launch an investigation.
Hey, the real shock is that Americans were this torn up about the monarchy. I thought we all agreed like democracy was the new wave. Like
I don't know.
I've seen the Supreme Court. I'm not sure they're on board with democracy. So
I didn't watch my buddies die face down in the muck in 1776 for this.
I don't know. I feel like a lot of my FYP is people being like, we hate the queen. She was mean to Diana.
Yeah.
We're out. I don't know. I see a lot of that.
I thought we'd all come around on that. I thought Diana was the key.
I feel like there should be like a Clarence Thomas straight up text response where he's like, ha ha, bozo, you know, the founding fathers would have said, you know, rest in piss, you know, where are all the Scalia fans? This should be a reason for enjoyment. You know, I'm pretty sure the founding fathers wouldn't have been sad about this.
Yeah. You see that the professor got rebuked by her university for saying something similar?
No, really?
Yeah, I think it was a Carnegie Mellon professor who said that she hoped that the queen's death was excruciating, I think.
Ooh, well, I mean, that's kind of mean.
Sure, but got rebuked by her university, which, you know,
I mean,
free speech and all that.
That is the take if you want to, you know, be consistent with the law writers at the time, you know. I don't think Jefferson would have been like, oh, well, I'm so glad she died peacefully. No, he would have been like, turn up. Come here, slaves. Yeah. Like that would have been the response.
Okay. Well, this conversation took a turn.
I mean, listen, football and a dead queen, we got it all here.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know I don't know what y'all did on Twitter this weekend, but that was Twitter this weekend. And it was hilarious.
There was also sports Twitter, which
I saw none of
it. It was a brutal college football Saturday. There were a lot of top teams that lost, and I really enjoyed that.
I mean, they paid. I saw somewhere that Sunbelt teams got paid something like $4.1 million to show up and whoop a bunch of Power 5 teams.
Love
that was nice.
Love to see it. Love to see it. Yeah, Notre Dame lost. Texas A&M lost.
Right. Texas also lost, but
they were an underdog. And also, I watched that entire game. Alabama deserved to lose.
They did. That did.
Besides the fact that their top quarterback was injured probably for 4 to 6 weeks with like a sprained clavicle, besides that fact, even with their backup quarterback who wound up getting injured as well, he was like hobbling around the field. I really thought that Texas was still going to pull it out, and they did not. And I thought it was a travesty, but it does seem like Alabama's road to the playoffs will be a little bit harder. Not, I mean, it's probably still going to happen, but seems like it might be a little bit harder than it is every year.
Yeah, I'll, you know, to give this something of a legal flair, we also had interesting employment issue this weekend, which was...
Did we?
Yeah, well, Nebraska fired its head coach.
Which, Scott Frost, former UCF national championship
that's
coach.
That's true,
Yeah, got fired this week. I mean, listen, Nebraska had a terrible set of performances the last two games.
But where this becomes a legal question...
I was giving background, okay. Joe. People, not everyone may be following all of college football. I'm giving background and color so people can really understand.
Okay.
Fight.
Anyway, you were saying.
Yeah, so where this is a legal issue is, like a lot of these contracts for football coaches, there's a buyout clause. He had a $15 million buyout, meaning that if they fired him for, you know, unless it was for something really bad, like for cause, but if they fired him for not doing winning enough, they had to pay him $15 million. He has not been winning enough, so they restructured his contract to only pay him $7.5 million. But that restructuring doesn't take effect until October 1st. And they fired him anyway. So they could have just waited.
2 weeks. Two weeks.
Two or three weeks here.
They could have, that they probably weren't going to win anyway.
Right. And they could have saved the athletic department and, by extension, possibly the public. Who knows? I'm sure Nebraska gets its money elsewhere than taxpayer dollars, ultimately, because they seem like the sort of organization that has big pocketed donors, but they blew an extra $7.5 million on this guy.
Yes, if just they just waited.
Him. Yeah,
they waited a couple of weeks, they would have saved almost $8 million.
Yeah.
But so, I guess firing him in the moment was more important.
And yeah, so too bad for those brilliant lawyers who must have thought they'd done some really good work in restructuring the contract to save the university money.
This is real, right? Like, those lawyers did do a good job. October 1st is not particularly long into the season. It's very reasonable to assume that the athletic department can wait till October 1st to fire someone if they want to fire someone. Yeah. Certainly more than two games in. It's fairly unusual to fire someone two games into a season.
Three, but yeah.
Oh, they played
did
week
win,
zero.
Yeah, yeah. They lost week zero to Northwestern.
Regardless, particularly since it's not like this is unknown. Scott Frost has been working there for a couple of years, never had a particularly great record. So you have to imagine some L's are built in, and you're going to fire him a few weeks early and cost yourself $7.5 million. Okay. Bold.
But yeah.
A quick aside to all our listeners who are not involved in the sports ball, this is a reason to get involved, because when they were talking about legal issues and firing, I totally thought they were going to mention the police deputy who got caught involved in sex trafficking. But of course,
I mean, that's
sports.
That's just normal.
Sports.
That was not nearly as surprising.
Yeah.
Well, you know, maybe I'm naive, but I thought that police are the people involved with stopping crime, but you know. You know, I'm just kidding. This is not
where do you live?
Yeah,
maybe
this is why he cares about the Queen. All right, and I think with that, and a very regal sounding fanfare, we will put a stop to small talk and begin talking about our.
We didn't even
topics.
Talk about Irish Twitter, by the way.
We did not.
And, oh, that was wrapped up in, but no. Let's talk about the sports.
Okay. Ahem. Small talk is over, officially.
It is decided.
It has been
decided. Coming from now, the guy that talked about legal issues during small talk, but whatever.
That's true. So now we're going to talk about law schools. In particular, we're going to talk about reforming them, or at least putting on the table the idea of reforming them.
Yeah, I mean, Neil Gorsuch gave a talk last week. I talked about a bunch of things. I think the biggest headlines were actually stuff that you wrote about, Joe, about the investigation into the Dobbs leak and whatever. He said exactly what you imagine a Republican on the Supreme Court would say about that. But he also kind of took on law school, saying that he didn't think that it was necessary that it takes 7 years, if you count 4 years of undergrad, to get a JD degree to be able to practice. And he also thought that it was silly that someone who wants to be a criminal defender has to take securities law. I guess white collar crime's not a thing, though, right?
Because
that's not a great example. That's not a good one. And he
Neil
also
Gorsuch with a bad example. No kidding.
Okay, I mean, you're not wrong. But he also talked about how so many people graduate with $150,000 worth of debt, which I think actually the average law school debt is a little bit more than that. But, you know, we'll see how much he actually cares about student debt when Biden's debt relief plan inevitably comes before the Supreme Court. So,
yeah,
I think this is all just revolve if everybody who owns debt just registers for an LLC, because we have no issue with corporations getting these sort of payments.
Bailouts. Yeah. So we've got.
That's a joke, by the way. Don't do that.
Yeah. This is an interesting question. Now, the question of whether or not you should we still need a 3-year law school curriculum has been out there for a while. I know Obama talked about
2013. It was a big story because Obama was like, pretty sure law school should be 2 years.
Yeah. So we got that 2-year contingent. I think what Gorsuch, who did, you know, do some of his higher education in England, I think he was talking more about the idea of having a more European style education, where if you want to be a lawyer, that's your major, basically, and that's wrapped into your 4 years. I don't know as though anybody has the right answer, but it is great that this is at least being talked about by Supreme Court justices. It's introducing it onto the table.
Pithy remarks at best, I would say. But because I don't think there's any sort, there's certainly not any analysis in the remarks he's given so far about, you know, what would happen to law schools, the money that universities take in as a result of getting JDs, what would happen to that, how that would impact the cost of undergrad as a result, because it would absolutely go through the roof, right?
I mean, would it though? See, like, I understand that law schools are the cash cow of major universities, but it doesn't look like universities are being all that chill about tuition now. They're making all this money off of law schools, and they're still jacking up prices. It's unclear to me if it really makes that much difference, or if this is just more money they're lining their pockets with.
I guarantee having to close their law school would result, whether it had to in terms of bottom line or not, but would in fact result in an increase in the cost of undergraduate education. Zero doubt in my mind.
Yeah, maybe. That strikes me as weirdly fatalistic, right? Like, that strikes me as though you're basically saying that it's almost like the hostage negotiation. It's like, we have to keep law schools or else everybody else suffers.
Well, I mean, I also think that it's important. Well, I think it's, I don't know about important, but it's certainly useful. I mean, we'd have to revamp the entirety of our education system starting from about eighth grade on if this is going to actually change, right? Because people right now, as opposed to somewhere like England or and other places in Europe, right, a lot of people treat their 4 years or less or more of undergrad as an opportunity to explore things that were not available in their limited high school curriculum, decide what's of interest to them, and then decide whether or not they need a postgraduate degree, like a JD. I don't think the way our education system is not any disrespect to teachers at all. I think it's a systemic issue. I don't think it's the teachers' faults. But we have a whole system of testing that is built up around the notion that you're not going to figure out that you want to be a lawyer. Now, most people will not know at 17 when they're applying to undergraduate whether or not what they want to do for the rest of their life.
Yeah. No, I mean, so I've actually never been on the shortening law school side. I actually like law school at the 3 years. I just think that what should happen is it should go hand in hand with getting rid of the bar exam. I think that we should not have people spend 3 years worth of tuition and then have another disconnected from everything, to use Gorsuch's whole criminal defense and securities law bad example. You shouldn't have to be testing out of all these practice areas you aren't going to go into. I mean, I just think that we need to utilize the end of the bar exam to make the second and third years more robust, and just create a system where you get out of those 3 years and you are prepared to go out and be licensed as a lawyer.
I mean, the other reason why I think this changing, radically altering the system has very little chance of actually happening in this country is because I think as a profession, lawyers are very invested in elitism. And it's a lot easier to be a gatekeeper when there are law schools and there are fewer law schools than there are undergraduate schools and all these other things. And it would be shocking to me if the profession would change in that way.
Yeah. I think it could be done in two. I mean, there seems like what's the general thing everybody tells OLs? One L, they scare you. Second year, they work you to death. And third year, they bore you. Like, there's not a general, there's never, I haven't heard from many people to be fair, I haven't asked this question, but I have heard from many people that were like, yeah, the third year really did it for me. In my personal experience,
it was a lot of fun. Yeah. I really liked my third year.
Yeah, but like, there's a distinction between fun and utility. In my personal experience, my third year was the year that I took the classes I was actually interested in. Not necessarily, I took that it's those are the year things that made me a better lawyer. I mean, like, if it was structured in a way where it was 2 years, maybe I could have took the classes I was interested in earlier on. Or I could have been on a track where I took classes that actually were in line with what I wanted to do. I don't think like doing a 3 year because of tradition or something is a reason to have on an extra 50K.
Well, I think that part of it's also because you need, if Joe's wrong about them restructuring the bar exam, right? Let's put the bar exam question to bed for a moment and say that there are a lot more classes than just sort of the required ones that you're going to need to take if you want to pass the bar exam, right? People take trusts and estates not because they are interested in writing Grandma Betty's will. They take it because they want to be able to pass the bar exam. So they have to sprinkle in those classes in between the stuff that they want to take and or clinics that are available a lot of schools. And it's because the bar exam is a generalist exam.
Yeah. So, like, I feel like you... If you're going to shorten law schools, you need to lean into the bar exam. Since I don't like the bar exam, I would prefer 3 years and no bar exam. But, you know, it's one or the other. I think but that's the philosophical question is where do you think licensing needs to be an additional thing on top of your diploma? And if you do, then I think you probably can shorten law school. And if you don't, I think you probably need to make law school higher standards and so on. But it's interesting, not so much that he has the right answers about anything, except maybe Indian policy, but it's that he's at least putting this out there on the table, like when Obama did it. I think it's, while Obama was a law professor, I think it's very important when the actual Supreme Court justices are starting to raise the, hey, maybe this is a broken system. I think it just creates a conversation that's worth having.
Sure, I agree with that.
Generate quality briefs, memos, and redlines in minutes with Callidus AI. You enter the case's facts, then Callidus suggests bodies of law, statutes, and precedents. You tell it if those are relevant, and Callidus generates a well-cited, well-formatted document. You can trust what went into it because you put it there. Be exceptionally productive with better outcomes using Legal's most advanced AI platform. Just 3 minutes from registration to results. Get $90 off your first 2 months. Use promo code Joe at CallidusAI.com. That's CallidusAI.com.
Hey, Gee, what's up?
Just having some lunch, Conrad.
Hey, Gee, do you see that billboard out there?
Oh, you mean that guy out there in the gray suit?
Yeah, the gray suit guy.
Order up. There's all those beautiful, rich, leather-bound books in the background.
That is exactly the one. That's J.D. McGuffin at Law. He'll fight for you!
I bet you he has got so many years of experience.
Like decades and decades. And I bet he even went to a law school.
Are you a lawyer? Do you suffer from dull marketing and a lack of positioning in a crowded legal marketplace? Sit down with Gee and Conrad for Lunch Hour Legal Marketing on the Legal Talk Network. Available wherever podcasts are found.
All right, so lawyering with families. That's
not a great week for it.
It is not a great week for it. No, not that it's necessarily easy to do for people anyway, but what all happened here?
Well, there were two stories. Do you want the one with the happy ending first or the one with the sad ending or the less great ending?
It doesn't matter to me.
So there was an attorney in Florida who asked for a continuance because his wife was having a child and it would be during his paternity leave. So he asked for a delay. And despite the fact that in Florida, there is a model rule saying that unless it would cause some undue burden for some reason or if it's done too suddenly or something like that, courts should presumptively grant these. The judge said no three times. And said, in fact, if you file another motion for a continuance because you're going on paternity leave, I'm going to sanction you. Fortunately, the legal media took up the cause, as did a number of other advocacy organizations, and the judge changed their mind. And that dad was able to file, paperwork to get a continuance to get his paternity leave. The other one is less of a good ending, mostly because I don't think anybody knew about it until after it sort of had happened. But it was a Seventh Circuit federal appeals case, and they asked for a continuance because there are two attorneys on the case. One of them was going to trial on another matter during the oral argument when it was scheduled, and the one remaining had just suffered, his wife had suffered a miscarriage, so felt that it was did not have the adequate time to prepare, and also wanted to take the time for personal reasons, which seems very, very reasonable. The other side agreed.
And the part that gets me.
Yeah. It's unopposed. The unopposed motion is denied. Seventh Circuit's like, no bueno. We only heard about it the day that the oral argument happened. So the attorney had to sort of, and it just reeks of the worst kind of sort of toxic masculinity, like what men aren't supposed to be upset or have emotional baggage when their family suffers a miscarriage. No, it should only be, you should just have a stiff upper lip and go about your day as if nothing happened. That seems weird and awful.
And put aside whether or not you personally are supposed to have emotions, like you're supposed to be supportive too. And it just,
it seems unnecessarily cruel.
It strikes me, having done this for a long time, that I can count on maybe one hand a situation where an unopposed motion should be denied. Like, it strikes me as though if both sides agree to something, you grant it.
Particularly about scheduling.
I would say scheduling is one of the few places where I might disagree, but only if the two sides are trying to bleak house something and just refuse to have to come to an end and drag it out and, you know, that sort of thing.
Sure.
That's not what we're talking about.
No.
We're talking about, like, putting stuff off.
I mean, the other dates that he suggested were, like, a week later, right? It was just, he was in the middle of it, right? He was in the shit.
Yeah.
And was just like, can I get a damn breather? And Seventh Circuit's like, nah.
Yeah.
Nah.
It just reinforces every terrible thing about
every terrible
courts.
Thought. And it's bullshit, right? Appellate work is hard enough. You don't need to add this kind of bullshit layer on top of it just to prove that you're tough enough to actually handle it. And I think it does a detriment to the entire profession as people see these stories and are like, this does not seem like a profession for me.
Yeah.
Maybe the court were just trying to, through this example, prepare students for what it's like to work big law.
Well, I mean, honestly think big law is kinder about
better
it.
Better than that. Yeah.
100%. I don't think, I worked at two different big law firms. I don't think for a second this kind of a request would be not taken very seriously and absolutely 100% granted.
You'd absolutely be told that, you know, go home, deal with that, and respond to my BlackBerry emails.
Oh, but, so you just aged yourself with your BlackBerry reference.
but still, yes, you probably would still have to do some stuff, but... Yeah. They'd be...
There's a lot, I think, and maybe it's also because you work them on a day-to-day basis as opposed to a judge that you rarely see and doesn't actually deal with you on a day-to-day basis, but like, I can't imagine, and maybe I was lucky, although didn't feel it at the time, but I can't imagine a situation where they wouldn't show a little bit more grace than this.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
It just makes me think of those dystopian horror stories that get shown off as being like a great worker, like, oh, some Harvard Law School graduate gives birth while also answering emails. Like, no, why are you doing that? That's not good. Don't celebrate this.
You know? Gave birth right while taking the bar exam.
I mean, that's a real story. That was one that we wrote.
And my takeaway there was, wait a minute, maybe this is a bad thing.
Yeah.
All right. So what's our last subject?
Well, it's back to school time. And I think for a lot of places, it means back to the office.
Okay.
You know, there's been a lot of talk, and we've mentioned it several times on the podcast, about what is it going to take for people to go back to the office, not necessarily full time. I don't think most places realistically expect 5 days a week anymore, but probably do expect 2 to 3.
Yeah, we're getting some interesting experimentation. Lots of people are pushing for some kind of a hybrid model, whether it's 4 days or 3 days. We have people who say, hey, come in 3 days a week. We have other firms saying, come in Tuesday through Thursday. you know, whether it's better to have the flexible model or everybody's here on these days. Like, everyone's kind of playing around trying to figure out what to do. And we have heard some of these stories where big firms are complaining that we have this hybrid system and you haven't been coming in. So,
right. And they're about to make it not voluntary.
Right. Which, you know, is unfortunate. But how do you make people come in? And why are
culture.
You? Well, right. And that's the thing. And the argument that people make is that it's some part of culture. You need to be around your colleagues for some reason. And look, I've defended the idea that there's soft learning that happens in law.
For sure.
Like, a lot of it is. And you have to be around people to see some of this stuff. That's, you know, how the younger generation figures this out. But the answer to getting people, coaxing people back into the office might be by having a cooler office, which brings me to kind of a story we had last week, which Vela Wood in Texas, and I think they also have an office in California, they have a long tradition of being very pro-travel. They want their employees to travel the world. They think it's valuable and have always been very flexible about making sure people are able to do that. They've had a program for a long time about people being able to work for a month at a time from anywhere. This summer, they got their culture in the fun way. To get that firm culture, they rented office space in Lisbon, Portugal, and invited everybody to come on out. And about half the firm did and stayed there for a couple
too,
of
right?
weeks. They paid a stipend to bring people over. A lot of people brought over their families and all, and had a couple of weeks, 2 to 4 weeks over there. It doubled as business development. They met with some clients, some prospective clients and all while they were over there.
That's pretty cool. I'm sorry. Okay, I'm in.
Yeah, like, what gets me about it is there's something about, and I don't know how, if there's a more like workplace psychologist way of doing this, of saying this, but it strikes me as though you're going to be, that culture is going to be built better by virtue of everybody having, you know, working in an unfamiliar location.
Sure. You're learning together. It's
yeah.
What's it called? Like when people bond together, not trauma bonding, but you know,
I think
kind
it's
of
just
your...
bonding. It's just bonding, Catherine. Surprise, lawyers. There are forms of bonding outside of suffering together. some people even call them things like friendship and camaraderie. There's a world outside of blue booking. Trust me.
I'm skeptical. Point is, yeah, it does strike me though that these folks are going to build a tighter unit by being in unfamiliar surroundings. And I'll say from personal experience, you know, kind of an unfortunate story given our proximity to this anniversary here. But so I was at Cleary Gottlieb, offices very much downtown Manhattan. We had to, as a litigation group, we had to relocate into temporary office space and work for, you know, four months or so, I think, in a different location. Mm-hmm. And everybody was in a different location and everybody was trying to figure out what they were doing. And I can't compare it to how that group feels normally, but I certainly felt more
esprit de corps
with the rest of the litigation group than I think I would have otherwise, because we were all crammed into a tiny place together. Nobody was like in their throne room that they call associates into, but they were catch as catch can of the wherever they
and everybody
could
have was kind of
yeah
everything was thrown into chaos then
yeah and so yeah obviously I think it would be a lot nicer to be in Lisbon, Portugal than in an unused floor of Paul Weiss's building, but
after a terrorist attack
so
better.
This is a better option,
better all the way around, but
yeah, no, but it, but good on them for coming up with a creative way of getting people to want to come back into an office environment, and just for the purposes of building that culture, because if culture is what you're after and not FaceTime for no reason,
this is the way to do it.
This is the kind of way to do it. And you know, whether it's inviting the whole firm out, or you know, you don't have to go to Portugal. It could be other trips and locations and smaller groups and teams or departments. But whatever, however you do it, if you care about the culture, like make people work together in kind of fun.
Yeah, let's have an office on the beach for a couple of weeks and see how much I like you then.
Yeah.
You know what they're really going to do? What they're really going to do is just add real estate stock to people's compensation packages. That's the only people actually care about actually coming in person, because then they'll want to make sure buildings are actually a thing in the future.
I mean, and I've said this before, but you can definitely tell based on firms' stances on hybrid working who signed their 10-year lease recently and who's about to have it come up. There's a trend line there that you cannot escape. So I think that's everything for this week. So thanks everybody for listening. You know, be sure to check out that survey that I think is attached to this episode if you're listening to this episode in real time. And if you aren't, well, then it's probably over. Anyway, point is, take that. You should be listening to the show, obviously. Subscribe. You get all the episodes when they come out. You should give reviews, stars, write something. You know the drill. You should read Above the Law, because, you know, you can see these and other stories before they are talked about here. You should be following us on social media. I'm at Joseph Patrice. She's at Catherine One. Chris is at Rights for Rent. Above the Law is at ATL Blog. You should be listening to The Jabot, her other show. I also am a panelist on the Legal Tech Week Journalist Roundtable. You should check out the Legal Talk Network's other panoply of shows that we aren't necessarily on, but, you know, sometimes we're guests on some other things. So check those out. And with all of that said, I think we're good.
Peace.
See you next week.
If you're a lawyer running a solo or small firm and you're looking for other lawyers to talk through issues you're currently facing in your practice, join the Unbillable Hours Community Roundtable, a free virtual event on the third Thursday of every month. Lawyers from all over the country come together and meet with me, lawyer and law firm management consultant Christopher T. Anderson, to discuss best practices on topics such as marketing, client acquisition, hiring and firing, and time management. The conversation is free to join, but requires a simple reservation. The link to RSVP can be found on the Unbillable Hour page at LegalTalkNetwork.com. We'll see you there.